echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a digital transformation podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations grow business value in a digital world. Episode 10, The Digital Future of Media and Entertainment. Today, we'll discuss the shifting landscape of media production and the transformation of entertainment and the way consumers are engaging with the content they love. Hello, I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist for Google Cloud, and welcome to That Digital Show. Today, we are going to touch on a topic that is very close to me. With over 30 years of experience in the media and entertainment industry, I have seen incredible technology advances and full disruptions from how we find, watch, and engage with media. From my beginning days serving popcorn at a local movie theater to the complete transformation of cassettes and CDs to MP3s, and of course, the onslaught of online gaming and esports, the last 20 years have been awesome. But nothing has impacted the media and entertainment space quite like the last 6 months in the face of the COVID pandemic. And technologies like APIs and cloud are helping to make this transition to the future easier. So joining me today to discuss this is Joe Barker and John Peters. Joe, would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself?
I am a digital strategist as well at Google, working with customers on their digital transformation journeys and strategy.
Great. Welcome, Joe. And John?
Thank you, Chris. So pleased to be here. I'm a managing director at Accenture. I'm the head of our media and entertainment practice here in the West. I'm a former Disney strategy executive, and I've spent the last 20 years helping media clients deconstruct themselves and reconstruct themselves to adapt and take advantage of these digital changes.
Welcome, John. Appreciate you being here. So let's dive into a topic that just recently was announced. Universal Pictures and AMC Theaters recently signed a multi-year agreement that will allow the studio's films to premiere on a premium video on demand within 3 weeks of their theatrical debuts. So, John, do we see this partnership having a major impact on movie theaters in the future?
I think it makes sense to say absolutely. Now, it's just the beginning, and frankly, there's no films in theaters right now. But it's the coming down of a wall that has been there for a very long time. The theaters have been really working on an existing model and protecting that exclusive window for themselves. What they've now done is say that we will allow others to reduce that window as long as they too can share in the digital windows that are emerging, exactly to the sort of what we talked about, digital's impact on media and entertainment.
Movies have always been a social experience. You go to a theater, you meet up with friends, you're in a large auditorium with a lot of people. Now, some people love that. Some people hate it. Some people prefer sitting at home and watching the movies. But Joe, when we think about that social experience, even now, like with at Google, we are having less meetings. All of our meetings are online. Is this really what the future is, where we're all just sitting at home watching things on our screens?
You know, Chris, I hope not. And there's a part of me already that kind of misses that social interaction. I think there's always going to be a place for the convenience of at home with premium video on demand and streaming, but it's always nice to make an experience out of it, right? It's not just the going to the film. It's the getting dinner beforehand and being able to sit with others and experience the laughs. That's the stuff that it's going to be really hard to replicate.
But Joe, we're seeing that already with technology. Technology is enabling us to be distant, be remote in our meetings, in our viewing of content. What's the problem with that?
Well, I still feel, you know, it's different when if I had a Google meetup and I have my friends via laptop sitting next to me, it's not the same experience, right? So I do think that there will always be a need to see a big tentpole release in theaters. I mean, that's just my perspective. But of course, there's opportunities where maybe if I could see my friends on the same screen as we're all reacting and watching. I just don't think we're there yet. And I still think that there's going to be that demand for theater experience.
You know, I love that idea. We should totally be able to stream a movie while watching each other's reaction and being able to say, he did it. I know he did it.
Exactly.
Virtually. Yeah. Streaming has been also huge in the last couple of months. Disney, as an example, has seen a huge increase to their subscribers on Disney Plus. John, I know we were talking just before this, but I mean, they have 60 million subscribers, and that's up 7 million subscribers in just the last quarter. Is this going to continue to grow for companies like Disney and Hulu and Netflix?
When you control content, and content is what draws us to those platforms, there can be a big future if you continue to generate amazing content. I think what's interesting is they have established the channel and the access point for you to get that content. And that is going to necessitate that we come to them. Now, what's going to be really interesting is to see how big it can get, right? Disney Plus is an amazing place for family entertainment. They have outside of that, a range of different franchises to fit that. You can see that internationally, they may be assembling a bundle to offer people more. So they are recently announced the Stars streaming service, and they have ESPN Plus, there's Hulu, that will remain a domestic brand. So you can see that the way in which we all might engage with a company like Disney is certain content is found in different places. That allows them to create unique bundles for us. For example, if you're not interested in sports, but you really want to watch things from Fox Searchlight and the Disney franchises, you might just pick off Stars and Disney Plus. That also allows them a certain amount of pricing flexibility. It's really interesting because we all have a discretionary spend bucket that is limited. And it may be that we also are attracted to the content of other platforms that are emerging. So we're going to have to make some decisions about where we spend our money. And things like portfolio strategies become a unique way for them to carve off different offerings and to carve as much as they can off and keep for themselves as much as that share of wallet.
There was a time where everything was an all-included package on cable. And then as people started to cut their cable and go off and consume only the pieces that they wanted, it was fairly cost beneficial to them. But now we're seeing people having 2, 3, 4, 5 different subscription services, which is really no different again than what they had when we all were subscribed to cable. So how are we personalizing this now? How are people going through the process, as you just said, identifying the pieces that they want and finding ways that they can mix and match the content that they care about the most?
Well, certainly the research that we're seeing so far is people are very content driven. And there is, in effect, same as in the old model, there is certain must-see TV that is driving them to make some of these decisions. There's also a high curiosity rate right now, and because people are allowing them to have 2 week or certain periods of free trials, there's a lot of trial. But if the content isn't great, people aren't sticking around. Read all about Quibi, for example, who's struggling in that space as they try and find content to resonate with their consumers. But you are correct, which is right now, you have swapped out paying for all of the 100 plus channels on whatever cable channel you have to paying for every single title in the Netflix library, right? And you might just be interested in certain categories. I do think that we will, at some point in the future, powered by APIs that can kind of extract out from each of these platforms onto someone's own, call it personalization layer, you can stitch together an experience and pay for just the things that you want to watch. And it, again, is, as you say, more personalized and right-sized to both your budget, your interests. And frankly, if you have a single layer that's seeing everything you're consuming across all those channels, that layer is really going to know you. Because right now we're stuck in a place where I'm spreading my viewing across multiple platforms, each of whom sees a sliver of my consumption. And as a result, they only kind of know me. Therefore, their recommendations only kind of make sense. If someone can see everything, they can make better recommendations.
In that more personalized world that you're talking about, Joe, these are things that we talk to customers all of the time about, which is you can leverage an API platform. You can build out API products that help in this personalization, this accessibility of the content, the finding and distribution of the content, even things like we're seeing now across networks like AT&T and their relationships with Warner's and HBO to be able to get those services as part of a package on your phone. All of that is being driven by APIs.
Oh, I completely agree. And I actually love, and I'm sure, you know, this is what Hulu's been leveraging. They just published research about how consumers are using different streaming services. And it's really cool. They kind of placed them into four different personas. I think they were therapeutic streamers, classic streamers, indulgent streamers, and curated streamers. And so I think that message that John was talking about deeper personalization, that's something that they're beginning to get smarter about. And they're realizing it's not a one-size-fits-all approach to that consumer behavior. And so now these companies, like you said, they're leveraging APIs to navigate through all that massive amount of data. And they're studying user behavior, monetizing new and old content, which you're seeing with like The Office reruns going from streaming service to streaming service, and then personalizing that overall viewing experience. So I definitely see that being leveraged with these early adopters, these giants in streaming, but I do see smaller streaming services are going to have to take note and they're going to have to adapt pretty quickly.
If history repeats itself and we go back and we look at the golden age of Blockbuster, which completely got dismantled due to the ability to receive DVDs in the mail, and then, of course, that got disrupted by streaming, are we going to safely say that movie theaters and the movie theater experience will always be around? Or will technology eventually overtake it?
I do think that what we're seeing is a clarification of the value proposition that cinema offers. And as substitutes emerge around it, they're either going to have to battle back and sharpen their value proposition or continue to evolve their value proposition or narrow it. Right? There may not be as many multiplexes 10 years from now, or there might be as many multiplexes, but we get more from them. So I'm excited to see, but I think you are absolutely right in hypothesizing that cinema as we know it is probably no longer going to be a viable way of approaching that business.
What we've seen with the AMC First Mover Advantage, right? So they're the largest theater in the world. So it's going to put pressure on their competitors to kind of make similar deals with these studios. So they have the advantage there. I'm curious to see, too, if this is going to give more potential for studios to release more films. When you think about those large tentpole films, there's a lot of upfront advertising that goes into that weekend marketing, right? TV ads, etc. Where without that, in this premium video on demand, direct to consumer, they get to maybe just take more shots and think about more creative or innovative movies or types of movies that they can directly release to the public.
Marketing plays an important role, even for something on a streaming service, because people need to know it's there. What's cool is in a streaming service, if you're already signed up, they have ways within the product to let you know that it's coming. Marketing, I expect, will continue to play a role. I do have concerns about the ongoing monetization of content in this new world, as all three of those sort of windows that we described are under siege. And for each window sort of propels the next. And if the first one is substantially sort of impacted, does the entire model fall apart? I will be very curious to see. It's likely to revolve around reduced production budgets. There might be more films with lower budgets. There might be fewer films with massive budgets. And those massive ones might still go through the theatrical, the more traditional windowing strategy because it's something that allows them to make a ton of money.
Well, we are seeing this already. We see plenty of other types of content being streamed to theaters, selling tickets to concert events or musical theater, Broadway, but even with Broadway now closed, those types of venues and getting together to watch that type of content, all of that right now is being disrupted. So if you don't have the content, even if you have a location to view it in, there's still a challenge. But I think there is some positive things. We are seeing, even with concerts, that most people believe the venues are going to open up at some point in time. I think I last read a stat that said 86% of people who have bought concert tickets for this year have opted to hold on to those to a later date as opposed to asking for a refund. I think those are all positive signs. I do agree with you, though, that at the base, movie theaters have to find a way to reestablish what they are. And maybe that's in a different format than what we've thought about today. I have thought about different ways that you can stream content to theaters in a more siloed experience. But again, the technology behind this is really what is driving it. And we've talked about this before. We've talked about how Blockbuster got disrupted due to technology. Cassettes and CDs got disrupted because of technology advancements. And it's only fair to believe that as technology continues to evolve, that even things like movie theaters, or even like as we meet on our daily business calls, we are accelerating this transformation, this disruption. And theaters that are no longer in service now because we can't go to the movies, they have to find a way to leverage technology like streaming, like APIs, like security, like the cloud, to help them reestablish who they are and to reach their consumers in new technology mechanisms. And if they don't do that, ultimately, they are going to go out of business.
Primarily, they are a venue. We've seen other types of venues adapt themselves. And even if you think about grocery stores, go back in time 15 years, totally different place.
Yep.
And so in the last week, quietly, an announcement was that Congress did finally remove the Paramount Decree, that old law on the books that prevented studios from owning movie theaters, right? They didn't want the creators of the content to own the channel of distribution for all kinds of different reasons. So it opens up the question of, is one survival mechanism for theater chains to ally themselves with a studio and to almost bring vertical integration to that part of the world? You are seeing studios get into the digital channel ownership. While it may not actually happen, it's another opportunity out there for theaters to reimagine themselves.
Just a moment ago, you started to touch on video games, and this is another area that is massively evolving. And we see the onslaught of cloud and cloud storage and cloud computing and APIs that are catapulting video games into all different forms, not only for the casual person who wants to play video games, but even in a professional mechanism for esports and the streaming of those services with multimedia capabilities. All of this has seen substantial improvements and growth in just the last 6 months, which is astronomical to me. Joe, I just have to ask, have you ever sat down and watched a professional esports game?
Absolutely, I have, yeah.
Yes.
It's incredibly impressive too, to see how skilled these players are. And especially when I go back to that same game and they're seconds ahead of I am on any Twitch movements. So it's very impressive. And you see these stadiums being full of folks that go and watch it in person. They're all watching the game. They're not necessarily playing it, but they're paying premiums to go and just watch this in a live environment. So yeah, it's blown me away, the amount of growth we're seeing.
And what are the monetization opportunities? So this is sort of fan viewing converted into monetization, right? And that's what we're doing when we're watching the Lakers play the Clippers, right? We were watching experts at a certain thing. So it isn't that different from live sports, but is there a subscription for us to get onto Twitch? Is there advertising that we see while we're watching? It is just like sports. And I think it's an interesting sort of derivative of the original content that was created, right? So you create, you name the game, right? Call of Duty. And now we're actually created a second opportunity, which is viewing someone watching Call of Duty, and I'm monetizing that derivative. It's interesting. It's creative. I'm excited to see what else there might be around that for other forms of media. But video gaming in itself has, again, moved from a, call it largely physical in the sense that there were these consoles, there were these games. The fast-growing and huge part is now this digital side. Technology is going to help us sort of get past those last barriers of why you might still need some physical stuff. The software and the responsiveness of the software may make it best that we always have the Madden game right there in our console versus sort of having a SaaS version that we're trying to engage with, particularly if a lot of people are engaging. But who knows? And so I think this is one of these spaces which new monetization that we never thought of has emerged, watching another gamer. And where does video gaming go? Because I think that this next generation is not shackled by all of our perceptions of what media needs to be. So their creativity might be unbounded at this point.
Well, our definition of what media and entertainment is shifting. Gaming is the fastest growing segment in media and entertainment. And what we're seeing now is that instead of going and watching a sporting event, you're watching an e-sport event. Instead of going and watching a movie, you may be going and watching some type of movie created within the environment that you are enjoying playing in. An example of this is there's a TV series out right now that focuses on the game Sims, and they are doing a competition for $100,000 where they're actually creating movies inside of the Sims world and competing against other players who are creating movies as well. So now you've got this creating atmosphere that is being monetized within the platform, within the virtual world, that is being shared with other people to watch and consume. And then you add on top of that the ability for these creators to build identities, build personas, build something that they can relate to in these virtual worlds that they can then get recognition for. But if you go beyond that, you have individuals who are building add-ons to games or building character skins for games or building whole environments, maps, new levels, all of this stuff. And they are getting rewarded either through recognition or through monetization of those assets that they have created within those gaming spaces. This is why the market has become so huge. It's one thing to log on to YouTube and create a video of you doing something. And it's very popular. And there's a lot of creators out there who are creating videos. It's another thing to say, I'm going to make my own movie or my own TV show. Almost near impossible, but there's plenty of people who are out there creating really great original content. It's something else when you can do that inside of a game for almost no money or no investment and for less time, and it's getting the same traction and the same viewership as something that's going to cost a lot more time and effort and energy in producing related to a television or a video series. And that is the power of gaming. That is what we are seeing happening that's transforming this industry in a way that, again, the technology inside of television and film can't do.
I agree with you, Chris. I think the barriers to entry are being reduced one by one every single year we go on, especially within gaming. And I do think that that's primary advantage as to why we've seen such rapid growth, because there's no degrees to separation from an athlete to a fan is pretty wide, right? There's no opportunity for me to interact directly with that person unless I'm an elite level athlete playing against him, or I'm somehow part of the organization where I can log on to Twitch and have that direct communication, a community of other people that support that same player, athlete, to have that direct line, right? I'm getting to witness what they're doing. I witness them getting better or the games they're playing and chatting directly with them. There's opportunities for me to message him directly if I pay $4 for a donation. And so I just see that being something that I don't think traditional media, I don't think sports or anything like that can really mimic.
So it sounds like it's time for our question of the day. Okay, here's our question of the day. It comes back to the technology piece of this. We are a media and entertainment company. We understand that technology is evolving. And APIs are obviously playing a big part of our digital strategy. What areas can APIs help us grow our consumption?
I think the advertising space, which I know we all sort of scoff at the world of advertising, but these are incredible targeting moments for advertisers where people are enraptured by something that's on the screen. You are watching their behavior over a period of time, so you're learning about them. And then APIs allow you to sort of fill in the blanks of what you don't know about them and then deliver ads directly to them. So the advertising space is one that's going to be interesting. They are seeing their traditional home of linear ads sort of losing viewership. Channels are declining. And those owners of those channels are deprioritizing the linear channels themselves. But marketers still need to spend. And so I'm interested to see the world of advertising evolve as the channels change, but also targeting ability powered by things like APIs allow you to more precisely deliver to Chris and Joe things that match with where they're at in their lives, what we know already about them. And perhaps we won't be so annoyed by those ads if they are properly personalized.
Joe, what do you think?
So I think there's a couple of key ways. One that we see, which is pretty much straightforward, is that APIs provide a structured way of exposing these resources, your critical resources or business functions, to other teams, external vendors, the public, and basically enables them to kind of find what they need when they need it, as opposed to having to reach out and go through some elongated process. The other thing that I think is critical with media entertainment and just content creation in general is that centralization and that traceability, right? So having that traceability of the assets and data, and that'll be critical as these production studios move to more virtual environments. So you get a centralized network, you have traceability to prevent leaks, which also might enable you to identify bottlenecks in the production process. And then the third, I think, is just we're seeing a constant influx of new devices, new platforms. And so without APIs, it's going to be incredibly cost efficient for companies. You know, they require large amounts of technical debt. And then you have dissatisfied customers because you're not at the delivery speed you want to be at. And so when you front end these with APIs in an API developer portal, you're providing a space where you can directly expose, for example, your web service APIs directly to your customers so they can quickly authenticate and authorize new applications and get going. And then there's no need for that old handoff or you have to sign this agreement, that agreement before we could even do business. So those are just three quick areas, I think.
Yeah. So between the changes in advertising that I believe is clearly happening, or Joe's point about just the technology and the types of devices that we are using, and then being able to get that content on those devices, being able to engage with that content, the way that studios are producing content or even video game companies are producing content, how we're distributing that content, whether it's streaming or through other services, and then that personalization, all of those features, all of those points are being generated and fueled with APIs. And I think to the question, if you have an API that's helping facilitate your development, your distribution, and your engagement, then I think you're on a great path for success. And so thank you, John, for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you, Joe. Appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you'd like to learn more about the show, visit thatdigitalshow.com. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And then share the link with your network, coworkers, and teams so they can transform and grow their business as well. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for the show, connect with us throughout social media and join us next week as we explore another digital transformation topic on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.